Good afternoon and welcome to the Dr. Naiman Show podcast. Today is Wednesday, December 23rd, 2020. On this episode, we share additional information on the evolving situation of the SARS-CoV-2 variants, as well as some of the very newest numbers on cases and deaths. Dr. Naiman has uncovered some interesting information in the GSED database. He has also discovered the variant popping up in more and more places. For the latest on this, we now turn to Dr. Henry Naiman.
Thanks, Ryan. Yeah, it is an evolving situation. It's a little bit complex if you look at all the individual players, but conceptually, it's really not that different. These variants have several elements in common, and in some cases, they're the exact same changes in common. The reason these changes are hopping around from one to the other is recombination. So the individual elements are out there in the database. In earlier cases, they were kind of by themselves, and most recently, they've kind of recombined. And so you have different groups that are different variants with different groups of elements. In general, all of these variants are really what I've referred to previously as the Italian strain. The Italian strain had one change in the spike protein that gave it an advantage. And it basically took over the world. So virtually all of the new cases now are the Italian strain, and they do have this one change at position 14. And that did give it an advantage over the other viruses that were circling the globe, and therefore, since they've taken over, almost every sequence contains this genetic change in the spike protein. Now, the variants that have been in the news basically have another element in common, and that is a change in the receptor binding domain. This is the portion of the spike protein that actually binds to the ACE2 receptor. And the one that's in common for all of the variants that are being discussed is N501Y. And so that particular mutation is in early isolates. It can be found without many differences in the spike protein other than the 614 change. And that's actually been in the United States, but in a limited number of isolates. I think there are about three isolates other than one case that was an immunosuppressed patient in Boston. He was a 45-year-old male. He was first infected back in, it was March or April. It was in April. And the spike protein only had the one change. It just had the D614G mutation. The G is one of the reasons this has been called in the past the G clade, because the D at position 614 changed to G. Then there were some other changes, not even in the spike protein, that gave rise to other clade designations like GH and GR. The difference between these three different groups, though, was either they didn't have an additional change, or they had change to produce R. And they all had the D614G in the spike protein. Like I said, the other changes weren't even in the spike protein. But this was early on. And then lineages began forming, and they were given names by lineage and kind of breaking them down because they were dividing them up. they couldn't keep tacking the letters on the name would get too long and too arbitrary and too difficult to remember. So these are, they switched off to, you know, a numerical system for the other element that's in common, in addition to having this one receptor binding domain change that they all have at position 501 and 614, which even the ones that aren't the variants have, because that's in just about everything now. These variants tend to have at least one set of deletions in the spike gene, and then some of them have a second set of deletions in another gene, most commonly the actually I think the other gene, they're all the NSB 6 gene. And these deletions are generally amino acids are deleted, so the deletion is 9 nucleotides long. And there's the one that's really in the NSB 6 gene. In the spike gene, what they have is combinations that the immunosuppressed patient, the deletion that removed amino acids 141, 142, and 140 in the spike protein, and then the one that's had the most attention, which is the one in the UK, it had in the spike protein, it has 3 deletions, but they're not consecutive. Two of them are the 69 and 70. That had been seen previously in mink farms, and so that deletion, it was in the mink farms, and in general, those sequences had that one deletion, which is two amino acids were deleted. The deletion was 6 nucleotides long. And then those sequences would be the Italian strain. So they'd have the 614 change, and then they would tend to have one receptor binding domain change thrown in. And those were the elements that were in the mink. There were quite a few minks that were infected. Some had one receptor domain change. Others had another receptor domain change. And initially there was talk of not culling them because most of those sequences were found in mink and not in human. Eventually they were culled, and eventually the virus spread dramatically. So the sequences with the two amino acids missing at 69 and 70, and the one receptor binding domain change are pretty common in Europe. It's not limited to the UK. They're in, the mink were mostly in Denmark initially, but the particular constellation of changes is pretty widespread. It's in Germany, it's in the Netherlands, it's in the UK. It's essentially all over the place. And then the third variant was recently described in South Africa. And that one also has three amino acids missing. And I'm trying to dig out the actual numbers of them. There are 200 and something. I don't have it right. Oh, there they are, 242, 243, and 244. So they're missing those three amino acids. So again, it's a 9-nucleotide deletion in the spike gene. They also have the same 501 receptor binding domain change, which is N501Y. And then they actually have two receptor binding domain changes, K417N and E484K. It turns out the E484K was also found in the immunosuppressed patient. So on the one hand, the immunosuppressed patient looks a little bit like the South African sequence, but not really. It's got a different deletion. It has a deletion, but it's in a different location in the spike gene. And one of the receptor binding domain changes it has, other than the 501, has it in common with South Africa. It doesn't have the other one that South Africa has, and South Africa doesn't have the other ones that he has. But they both have multiple receptor binding domain changes. And today, the UK announced that they found two cases in the UK who had the South African sequence. I believe they were contacts of people who had been to South Africa or had been from South Africa. They didn't really talk a whole lot about it. The original people that got contracted the virus. They were talking about the contacts of those people that had contracted the virus, because they had contracted the virus also. So the one sequence is that GSAD, the other sequence, I don't know, is in the media reports to talk about these two. They say there were two patients. And that one is really a combination. It has the deletion that was seen in South Africa in the spike gene, but then it's got the deletion that was seen in the UK in the NSB 16. So it's, again, the sharing of these elements, where it's not only that they have a deletion, but they have the identical deletion. So they got the exact same deletion is in the South African sequence that's in the UK. And it's conceivable that it recombined there and basically brought the South African spike gene and then picked up the UK NSB 6 deletion. Now, remember that the genome of the coronaviruses is not segmented like influenza. Influenza, if you said that they had one gene from one source and one from the other, they'd say, oh, that's not recombination, that's reassortment, because it's segmented and they want to pick up one of the gene segments from one and one from the other. There's a dual infection and a reassorted that way. And indeed, reassortment does happen in influenza, but recombination between the, within the segments also happens there. But we're not talking about influenza. We're talking about coronaviruses, and everybody agrees that coronaviruses recombine, and the coronavirus is much bigger. It's twice the size. There's 30,000 base pairs in the coronavirus, and it's all one piece. So it's you got a piece of it in one play in one virus, and another piece in another virus. There's no reassortment to fall back on. That's due to recombination, and that's exactly what's happening. And the recombination can happen in situations where to get recombination, you have to have the same person infected with two different viruses. And it doesn't have to be a person. It could be a host, and you could have recombination in a situation like a mink farm, where the mink are fairly high density, and if they just had a sniffle initially, they were might have been ignored. In fact, I think the mink might have been ignored until they started dying, and then they realized there was a serious problem. They realized that it was a coronavirus, and then they realized it was a coronavirus with receptor binding domain changes and two amino acid deletion. But it's possible that some of those changes arose through recombination because the mink farm would have a fairly high density of hosts and conditions that would allow the virus to go from one mink to another and from a mink to a person or a person to a mink. It's not really clear. In all likelihood, it started with a person to a mink, but whether the virus that went into the mink, potentially more than one virus, is the same virus that came out of the mink is a little bit unclear. But it is clear that the virus that was in the mink is now in a lot of humans, and it spread very well in humans. And but that particular strain didn't have the receptor binding domain change to send these various variants that are being discussed. So they didn't have the N501K. They had two other ones that were nearby, but they weren't the same. And actually, they didn't have two other ones. There were two other ones that were in the mink. So some mink had one of them, and other mink had the other. But the mink sequences didn't have two receptor binding domain changes. They had one receptor binding domain change, and they had the deletion, and they were the Achillean strain, or the 614 change. And that's kind of the different players in the game. There are, like I say, in the U.S., a variant has not been identified, but elements of the variant have. And that immunosuppressed patient was in Boston. The change in South Africa in the spike protein actually was in an isolate in the U.S., in Florida. That isolate was fairly recently. It was deposited both at GSED and GeneBank at the end of November. But it was collected in July 3rd, actually. So it was collected on July 3rd, and nobody other than the people that did the collection knew about it, or people they might have polled, but they didn't deposit it until late November, and then they deposited it in both places. So it was at both GeneBank and GSAD. But there aren't a whole lot of recent sequences out of Florida. And so what exactly is floating around in Florida is unclear, and that's the state of multiple states in the U.S. that keep in mind that this is a relative, the variants where you had all these elements together in the same virus and in the same host, really started taking off and are really were identified in late October. And so most of the sequences on these variants are from the UK, and most of those sequences are from collections in November and December. There's some at the end of October, but the majority are November and December. And therefore, if somebody got infected in the UK and went to another country, you know, they might not really be in hospitals yet. That they may have brought the virus, and they may have developed some symptoms, and they may actually be people that were contacts of people that went to England and developed symptoms and then affected them. The virus is easily transmitted, both of them, both the one in South Africa as well as in the UK. And to actually get a sequence, the person, most of the sequencing is done in patients in hospitals. And most of it's actually done by labs in hospitals. And that's what happened, like in New York. Eventually there were like four or five different hospitals that were basically sequencing their patients. And so for those patients to have their sequence in a database, they had to A, get infected, B, go to the doctor, C, get tested, D, get admitted to the hospital, and then possibly get in the ICU before they started collecting the sample to be sequenced. And then they had to be sequenced, and then they had to check the sequence, and then they ended up depositing the sequence. And so for a sequence to show up in the database, it can be several months after infection. And now with these variants, for instance, the UK, they've cut that down somewhat. The sequences that are going in today from the UK are virtually all December collections. So they're, and a lot of them are something like 10 days ago. So, I mean, there's collections now that were made in mid-December and or early December. And that's unusual to have that quick of a turnaround. Usually there's a little bit of a delay. But even those cases, the fact that you can see the sequence 10 days after the sample was collected for sequencing is still potentially many days, if not weeks, after that person was infected before they ever got around to getting in the hospital and getting a sample collected. So the fact that it isn't in the U.S. databases doesn't mean it's not in the U.S. by any stretch of the imagination. That there's a very good chance. Now, the virus has started to show up in people who had been to the UK. There was a report out today of four cases in Israel, three of which were staying at, quarantine station. I'm not exactly sure, but three of them were at the same location. And I believe that some of these people actually were being quarantined, and they apparently were being quarantined, tested positive, and I said, "Well, let's sequence this and see what we got here." And they found out they got the variant. So there's four in Israel. There's more than that in Denmark. There's about 8 or 10 sequences now from Denmark. A couple sequences popped up from the Netherlands yesterday. A sequence popped up from Singapore yesterday, and it was a little bit unusual that the in the NSB protein, instead of having the deletion, the sample didn't have the deletion, but they had two changes in the in two of the three amino acids that would normally be deleted. And that showed up yesterday and disappeared today. So it's really unclear why the ability to access that sequence is currently denied. It says at the request of the submitter, and why they did that, I'm not sure. But that there was a 17-year-old female, and the media reports now are describing a 17-year-old female in Singapore who was positive and who had traveled from the UK. And so that particular case is now public, although last time I looked, the sequence wasn't, although it was yesterday. In addition to that sequence, there's a sequence from Gibraltar. There are two sequences from Australia, one who is 6 years old, the other is 12 years old. There are, like I said, eight or nine sequences from Denmark. Media reports are saying there are sequences in Brussels. There are sequences in Iceland. There may be sequences from France. And like I said, it's unlikely that the sequences I've mentioned today are the total number of sequences that are going to be identified in countries outside of the UK or even South Africa. There are quite a few sequences in South Africa. And there are earlier versions of this. I mean, there's sequences in Wales that have the N501Y, but they don't have the deletion, and they don't have some of these other changes that are in the spike protein. And the same is true in South Africa. There are sequences in South Africa that have the N501Y that are don't have a bunch of additional changes. And so in some cases, you can kind of see these viruses evolving, but in other cases, they're really mixing and matching. And the mixing and matching is very strong evidence that that's happening by a recombination. And so the problem is that when you get this much virus and you have this many people, then you increase the likelihood that people will be dually infected. They'll be infected by two different viruses, or when they're infected with two different viruses, if they recombine and the recombinant has a selective advantage, it will end up emerging from that individual, and all of a sudden that individual will have a recombinant. And unfortunately, some of these changes may have come through selection in immunosuppressed patients who are being treated with convalescent anocera. And these would be antibodies in the sera from patients who have recovered. And so they'll have antibodies to the virus that the general public is making. And the concern is that in the immunosuppressed patients, that these antibodies help and they knock down most of the virus, but they kind of give a selective advantage to any variants that basically have a combination that allows them to escape the antibodies. Those are called escape mutants. It's not a new concept or a new finding. And these escape mutants basically have evaded the immune system. And that is one of the reasons there's concern that these receptor binding domain and the fact that some of these may have arisen from immunosuppressed patients, and the case in Boston definitely shows how many different sequences could be derived from the same individual who had recurrences between April and August, or September. He ended up dying in September. And once he had the N501K, he was pretty much in the hospital. He was in the hospital. He briefly got out of the hospital, and he went right back in the hospital, and then he died. And so when he was in the hospital, they were checking his titer, and his titer went up with the 501K. I'm sorry, the 501Y. That is when he ended up passing away, and he was only briefly, it went down on, I guess, August 31st, and then by September 3rd, he was back in. So, I mean, I take it back. At least it went down August 18th, and he was back in on August 31st. So it was, you know, a two-week period there. Which he was probably going down and the virus was coming up. So it was very briefly that it had gotten very low. And then it was really at its highest levels when he came back in for the last time. And it did start to go down a little bit because they ended up giving him the Regeneron monoclonal antibody cocktail, which is in addition to remdesivir, which was in addition to the convalescent Anacera. And, so he was treated a lot, but to no avail in the end. But his samples were sequenced, and there are, you know, quite a few. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's actually 9 different sequences from this patient over that time period, and it was written up in the New England Journal of Medicine. Is available online last month, and then it was published formally December 3rd. So I think it was November 11th when it was available initially online. But in any event, all of these are following the same pattern, that they're the Italian strain, so they got the D614G. They picked up this receptor binding domain change, which is N501Y. Generally, they have deletions in the spike protein. Sometimes they have deletions, also have a deletion in another protein, NSP6. And then they seem to have some other changes, but I won't go into that. I mean, this is a heavily mutated. So, you know, media say, well, viruses mutate all the time, and they do. And coronavirus recombined. They haven't talked about recombination, but they do that also. And the reason there's concern about these, though, is that they've got an advantage over the other Italian strains. So, I mean, there's Italian strains without all these changes, and they don't do as well as the Italian strain with these changes. And in the UK, they've pretty much taken over there, and the concern is they're going to expand, which they've already have. But they're going to expand undetected, and they're not going to be in a limited number of people that basically are identified and quarantined and tested and found to be positive. They're worried about the ones that aren't quarantined, aren't tested, and are still positive, but not by a test, just by the virus and the ability to more effectively infect others. And the virus is currently spreading undetected. I mean, in some cases, they may know that the person is positive for the virus, but they're not going to know that it's got a variant until they actually sequence them. And even in the UK, only about 10% of the cases are sequenced. And they're lower elsewhere. And in most cases, they're not sequenced as quickly as they're being sequenced in the UK. So something that just happened a couple of months ago and then came to a new country, even if it came to that new country, the people in the new country may not have any idea for several months afterwards. And it's currently several months afterwards. So, you know, now is the time that New York has actively started sequencing presumably recent sequences, although I believe they're all coming from hospitals. I think there's six hospitals involved. And so, again, the patients are in the hospital. Frequently, there are going to be patients that were infected a month ago. And the virus wasn't nearly as widespread a month ago as it is today. And so there could be people that are just arriving. The fact that they're doing a lockdown may lead more people to one way or another try to leave. They're talking about quarantining, which really isn't that new. I mean, I have a relative that actually is in London right now. And it's actually a wife's relative. But she flew to London and not you know, this week, a couple of weeks ago. And she did have to be in quarantine when she arrived because she was arriving from the U.S. But she was planning on doing a fair amount of sightseeing. I don't think she's doing a whole lot. She's kind of stuck there. But I would imagine that she got on a plane, she would come back to the U.S. and she would, you know, be asked to quarantine, especially. Well, I think she'd be asked to quarantine anyway. New York's talking about using police to check up on people. I'm not sure that all the states are doing that. And frankly, you know, it's I don't know how well they're tracking who goes where. I mean, I could envision some people deciding that, you know, they'll do a two-step. They'll take a plane to Brazil and then go to the U.S. or something. And therefore, they'll be arriving from Brazil. Of course, Brazil's probably not a good choice. And, you know, they would have problems. But they would, I mean, pick another country that doesn't have as much virus, and they may not have as much scrutiny when they arrive than if they flew directly from London, but or the UK in general. But in any event, people are getting on planes. They are landing. They are, in some cases, being quarantined, and they're testing positive for the virus, which doesn't mean other people are not being quarantined. I'm not sure if they do testing. I mean, there's some airlines now, they're going to require testing or proof that the passenger is negative before they get on the plane. And that might cut things down, although all of that testing is a little bit tricky. A, you get a false negative, and B, you get infected after the test. Or C, you could have been infected just before the test and there still was enough virus there. Or, yeah, it could be a false negative because they didn't collect the swab properly. And so there's a lot of ways the virus can get in, even if the person coming is tested and does test negative. It's all in the timing and the sensitivity and the technique. And there's room for improvement in each of those areas. So it's definitely possible to arrive here undetected, arrive you know, fly to another country undetected, even though you are already infected. So we'll see exactly how the likelihood that this virus is going to get contained. And I mean, right now everybody's focused on the UK, and not that many people are focused on South Africa. And so how many people are flying out of South Africa versus, it's not at their peak season now. They're in the southern hemisphere. So they have that going for them. But this virus is very transmissible, and it infects younger people fairly easily, including those without underlying condition who end up in the hospital. And so, you know, they could very well be, you know, transmitted in schools. You know, I think it's the end of the school year. But at any event, and I don't know, the school year may be over. I'm not sure exactly what that is. But even if they're not in school, they're still children that in the past weren't as susceptible to the initial SARS-CoV-2, or even the Italian strain SARS-CoV-2, as they are the variant. The UK is describing it as a more mutated or more advanced strain, because in South Africa there's actually three receptor domain changes. There's the 501, and there's two others that are associated. And so that's the 4K417N and E484K. So there's three, and they're arguing that it's even more contagious. But there aren't as many people in South Africa, and there's definitely not as many sequences. That doesn't mean there aren't as many people, but it is more of their off season. But the U.S. certainly had significant outbreaks and spread in the off season in the summer here, so they certainly could do it in South Africa, especially if they've got a variant that's got a 9 nucleotide deletion and 3 receptor binding domain changes, and possibly even another deletion in the NSB6. So, I mean, as far as cases are concerned, the cases were high yesterday. I tallied there were 3,267 deaths and 193,759 cases. These cases in the U.S. follow a pattern. They generally, especially on deaths, are down on Sunday and Monday. And they start going up on Tuesday, and then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday are usually the biggest days, although the holiday this week and next week will undoubtedly keep those numbers down and distort the numbers, but they will likely produce another wave in January. So January could be the worst month, although for deaths, those people probably won't be dying until February and March. And even the vaccination starting now, people really aren't going to be fully vaccinated until end of January, mostly beginning of February, and the vast majority will probably be later than that. They won't be fully vaccinated well into February or maybe early March. And so the vaccines aren't going to make a big impact on cases and death in December, January, and probably February. And the travel certainly will. And plenty of people are hopping on planes. And so cases will start going up. It usually takes several weeks. So they'll start going up in January, probably more towards the end of January, and most of those cases won't die until February. And January, there'll be deaths from Thanksgiving. So Thanksgiving wave is still in play. Christmas, New Year's wave will start in January, February. And the variants will, A, spread, and B, potentially be new variants. And that's one of the reasons most scientists that are paying attention predicted there would be a fall wave. That's just what's happened in 1918. This is what happened in the swine flu in 2009. And it wasn't very difficult to come up with the prediction that things were going to be worse in the fall. They were worse in the fall. And not that unusual for a new variant to kind of take over, and it looks like new variants are taking over. And generally, if you have a higher viral load, you don't do as well. You know, they say, well, people haven't died. Well, it hasn't been long enough for people to die. And they have said in South Africa that younger people are getting infected. They're going in the hospital even if they don't have underlying conditions. And I'm sure the same thing's happening in the UK. There's certainly an increase in cases. And we'll see how well the lockdown works there. But I doubt that the travel restrictions are going to have a huge impact as far as containing the virus. Now, it might take a little longer to spread, but I think that January and February will be two very bad months, even though the vaccines have got started. And I think there'll be more variants, and I don't think they're going to be contained to the UK and South Africa. So that's it for now. We'll see, but numbers should be higher today and tomorrow. And come down over the holidays, but only in reporting, not in actual cases. That's it.
Thank you for that information. That's it for this edition. Tune in again for the latest updates on the unfolding pandemic. Have a nice day, and thank you for listening.